Chosen of Khorne by Anthony Reynolds. Performed by Sean Barrett, Rupert Degas, Chris Fairbank, and David Timpson. Darkness closed in around Mavin as he continued his descent into the claustrophobic labyrinth of the Hypogeum. Hot air gusted along the crumbling stone tunnels, rippling his tattered robe. The wind was corpse dry and rasping. It rose from the depths of the earth, as though it were the very breath of the demon world itself, and carried with it the scent of things long dead and forgotten. The only light came from an archaic lumen brazier that hovered beside the seneschal, grav motors buzzing gratingly as they kept the device aloft, vibrating the still air. The darkness beyond the brazier's illumination was utterly impenetrable. Mavin's face appeared bloodless and devoid of color in the insipid pale glow. He was, by human standards, an ancient creature. Bitterness and resentment were carved deeply upon his age-worn flesh, and his eyes gleamed like shards of obsidian in their sunken, cadaverous sockets. His body was emaciated and frail, yet even so he wore a short blade strapped at his side. Even the oldest servants of the world-eaters were warriors and expected to fight and kill when called upon. With each step, his bronze staff of office thudded against the sand underfoot as he advanced into the gloom. The tunnel was only 2 arm spans wide, yet the ceiling was high and lost in shadow. The darkness seemed to press in on him, as if resentful of his presence. He could see recent footprints in the dusty red sand of the tunnel, and he followed their direction. 9 envoys had been sent down here over the course of the day. None had returned. Other than these marks of recent passage, Mavin doubted that anyone had set foot down here in countless millennia. But then, time flowed strangely in the eye. 1,000 years here may have been just a matter of hours in real space. The buzzing brazier began to flicker and dim, and Mavin increased his pace, hurrying on along the tunnel. It was one of thousands, carved into the rock beneath what had once been a great city. He passed side passages and narrow defiles, many of which were choked with fallen rubble and debris, and countless carven doorways leading to hollowed-out cells and oubliettes. All of these were cramped and claustrophobic, with low ceilings and close walls. Movement clawed at the edge of the seneschal's vision as he swept past these ancient holding cells. They were haunted by the fractured memories of the past. Given life by the immaterium, these tortured death echoes lingered at the edge of perception. They were screaming, bloody and insane, and their forms were insubstantial and fractured, like distorted picked feeds. He paid the hateful manifestations no mind and continued along the tunnel. He was long accustomed to the howling madness of the warp and had more pressing concerns than to be distracted by something as inconsequential as the disturbed echoes of the past. The day had been a disaster, and he felt uneasy that his counsel, which his master had chosen to disregard, had proven somewhat prophetic. He was old enough to recall a time when the now fractured Legion had borne its first name with pride. The galaxy had been a vastly different place back then, and his master had been a captain of the Legiones Astartes, not the warlord leading a bloodthirsty rabble that he had become. He remembered the electric thrill of hope and excitement that had infused the Legion's ranks when the fleet was informed that their beloved Primarch had been found, in spite of the horror that had followed. Only one son of Angron had ever truly held the Primarch's favor, and he had gone on to bring the Legion low after the grand failure of the Horus heresy. Mervyn had counseled his master against calling upon the betrayer now. But Argus Bronn's desire to see his rivals crushed had overridden any doubts and misgivings he might have harbored. Bronn was convinced that with the betrayer fighting with him, Tarugar and his devourers would have been swept aside. He would be declared the chosen of Khorne, and the honor of leading the bloody crusade would fall to him. However, the betrayer had lived up to his epithet. When the time had come, he would not fight for Bronn, and instead disappeared into the darkness below. Still following the footprints of the envoys that had come before him, Mervyn turned down a side passage that was wider than the others. As he rounded the corner, his stride faltered. An inadvertent shiver ran down his calcified spine, despite the stifling dry heat pervading the tunnels of the Hypogeum. The quality of the air had changed. Threat was palpable, like a storm waiting to break. It seemed darker here, too, and every sense he possessed was set on a razor's edge. He could taste a metallic tang in the air, the unmistakable scent of blood. The betrayer was near. The footprints in the sand led into the brooding darkness. None came back out. Swallowing his fear, Mervyn forced himself to inch forwards. The tracks led some 30 paces down the tunnel corridor, and then slowed, becoming faltering and cautious. The others had not possessed the same augmentically enhanced senses as Mervyn. Doubtless the stench of blood had only just reached them at this point. To him, the stink emanating from the blackness of the cell beyond was almost overpowering. He saw darker patches on the red sand underfoot. Though he felt malevolent eyes watching him from the darkness, the seneschal steeled himself and stepped forwards. The glow of the lumen brazier did not fully illuminate the cell. Shadows clung to the corners of the room like oil. He could see no one, but he knew that he was not alone.
My lord?
Crumbling pillars bore the weight of the low ceiling, making the cell feel like a crypt. Rusted chains hung from iron fittings on the roughly hewn walls, which were awash with arterial spray. Body parts were scattered across the floor, like the discarded toys of a demented child. Most were completely unrecognizable as ever having been human, so violently and so completely had they been abused. It was the work of a rabid beast. Entrails squelched beneath the soles of Mervyn's sandals. He picked his way through the carnage, covering his mouth and nose against the stink with a fold of his robe. It was an abattoir stench of blood, ruptured viscera and butchered flesh. Leaning close to one of the pillars, Mervyn turned slowly on the spot, his eyes straining to penetrate the shadows beyond.
My lord, I am Mervyn Bitterspear, Seneschal of Argus Brond, former captain of the 17th Company.
The light of the lumen brazier cast an irregular shadow on the far wall, and Mervyn moved hesitantly towards it, squinting in the gloom.
I come to beg your presence on the surface. A blood challenge has been issued. Will you not fight, as you pledged?
The shape that had caught Mervyn's attention resolved itself as the brazier's light advanced with him. It was a weapon, leaning against a low stone dais jutting from the wall.
Gore child!
The chain axe seemed larger than he remembered. How many had fallen beneath that savage weapon? Forged by Angron himself, it stood almost as tall as he, and its teeth were thick with ragged flesh and congealed blood. Six skulls were arrayed alongside Gorechild, four to the right, two to the left. Mervyn tried to... Then he saw him. Statue still, slouched upon the dais, like an arrogant warrior king upon his throne. His arms were bare, as ever, and his wrists wrapped in chains, in imitation of his gladiator Primarch. He wore a heavy, battle-worn plate of an early design. His crested helmet lay on the sand at his feet. The betrayer's face was hidden in shadow, but his eyes were like burning embers, radiating the promise of violence and uncontrolled fury.
Khan!
Mavin stood transfixed, and the giant reached for his axe.